Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
That was not a great transition. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We want to thank everyone for calling and texting and emailing.
Most of all, thank you for listening on this Monday.
Victory Monday, because we're not letting them drag us down. We're still winners. I worry about that because I sound like I'm in complete denial like others. Hey, our thanks to our guy, Mr. Dustin Rhodes. He's our executive producer.
Way to go, Ryan Pace.
That's what Dustin likes to say. And Kevin Zipak is just an extraordinary human and really one of the people that needs a McCarthy Genius Award.
It's a difficult time to talk about a lot of things.
That's what he wrote here. I have to repeat it, apparently. And Ray, God love you, Ray, all that you've done. Bless you, kind sir.
Thanks, Ray.
I hope you guys can respect this time of year.
Oh, boy. And now we get an opportunity to bring in our dear friend and companion, the calm one, the man that you can't touch. He's the Teflon Sports Radio host. He's Dan Bernstein.
Hey, Dan.
What's up, boys? It's one of these rare times where We all know it when we feel it, right? This reminds me of the back-to-back 50 burgers that Mark Trestman's teams allowed. We all know it. Whether anything happens or doesn't happen, whether it takes to the end of the year, everybody, from the guy at the corner stool at the end of the bar when people used to go to bars, to everybody you're texting with during a game, we all know something ended yesterday.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to say it's alarming, but it's somewhat even surprising to me how obvious it has become. I guess that's what I didn't anticipate. I felt like this was a big year for Ryan Pace. I felt like it could be a big year for Matt Nagy in terms of playoffs or bust. But I am stunned, I guess, that they have lost six in a row and it's the low water mark for the past 18 years and they are as bad and as lost as they appear to be.
And if something like that yesterday doesn't result in major consequences organizationally, what's the point? What are we doing? You know, then nothing means anything. If you can really watch that unfold, and if you go back and look at the play-by-play of it and look at the way everything happened, I'm convinced of this too. And I'm just going to go with, you know, with the conversations that we all have during games. Even had he not fumbled, I think they're losing the game anyway. I felt it then, because even had he, that just made it cleaner and clearer, and it gave them the opportunity with 97 seconds left to try to mount what might have been the ill-fated comeback attempt. But it felt right then and there when that 96-yard drive that took up 2:15, then the Bears get the ball back and they can't decide. The one thing Nagy's never been able to do is figure out how to dial up. Are we being aggressive or are we being careful? And that gets to your how vexed you are about the Darnell Mooney kickoff non-return. Because then, if that's the case, if he's doing that because he's coached, you can't say on the fumble, well, we had to be aggressive there. Which is it? It's never consistent. And it just seemed to me, where that game started going, that even had he not fumbled, even had they punted it away, Matthew Stafford was coming right back down that damn field.
That is so it was like preordained they were going to lose no matter what.
No, but you can, you know, we've been around this long enough to feel it. And what was happening was Chuck Pagano was calling defenses as if his pass rush were good. That defense he's calling works. I get it. Vic Fangio uses that defense all the time. That defense works, but not when your pass rush sucks. Not when Mac is hurt and Hicks is on one leg and Quinn is bad. He kept strategizing the defense based on what he thought could be rather than what was, and it got his ass beat.
You know, and you make a really good point about the Mooney kickoff return that I've been harping on, and the how it contradicts the approach on third and four. If you are going to be safe that series, then be safe that series. Follow through from beginning through the end and run the ball, eat the clock, take your chances with that bad defense. But Matt Nagy has been a bundle of contradictions almost since the midseason of his first year here. And that's been as big of a problem that's led to his undoing, if you will. And that's baffling, frustrating, all of the above.
I can understand approaching a 10-point lead conservatively. That makes sense. We got to get a win. Our punter has been terrific. We still think our defense is trustworthy. I understand all that, but just be consistent about it. Then on the play that gets you fired, you not only put Mitchell Trubisky in the pocket, trying to make decisions in the pocket, which is the thing at which he's worst, with Jermaine Ifedi at right tackle. I mean, you decided to set up everything to fail. You deserve consequences for that particular play. If you get him on a little sprint out action or bootleg action, you know, some sort of levels concept that he's good at on the move, processing things with his feet moving, I get that. But to put him on that play in the pocket, I don't get it.
Doesn't make any sense.
I don't get it. I don't know why you don't. The whole second half, the first half, you're pounding away with David Montgomery. Looks like he's ready to work himself into a lather. And then you just kind of don't use him in the second half, despite the fact that you finally have a lead. You're finally there. You've got your opportunity with the interior of the offensive line somewhat trustworthy, not awful. Here you go. Inside zone, impose your will, and then that doesn't happen.
That's the other contradiction. You know, you score three rushing touchdowns in the first half. First time that's happened in 30 years. And then the first series of the third quarter, David Montgomery doesn't touch the football and doesn't touch it until 3 minutes are left in the third quarter. That's how you get yourself fired. That's how you get staffs fired. That's how you make bad decisions. That's how you become, you know, that's how you go from 5-1 to 5-7.
A choke is a choke is a choke is a choke. And that was the chokiest choke that ever choked.
I like the idea of what got you fired before it's even happened, because I think we are in the predictive business, and it seems pretty apparent that, you know, what was it? What actually got you fired? How did you get fired there? Oh, look, he got fired again. It's a good question. What got him fired?
In large part, inconsistency and not putting players in the best position to succeed. And this was, think about all the context. He played the rant card the day, and not immediately after the game, not pounding the lectern immediately after the game. The next morning, 1 week ago today, he made the conscious decision to play the angry card and frickin' this and flipping that, and we got to have some pride. Like, you're shot now. Like, you're out of cards to play. This is how it looks when at the end.
Those are valid. That's a valid point. That bothers me less than what I think we talked about earlier. That just, you know, what got him fired would be the inability to tailor the talent or your scheme around the talent and trying to force fit the talent into your scheme. And I think whether that's how many changes you've encountered and philosophical changes on the offensive line, whether it's how the quarterback was unable to kind of, you were unable to adjust to his skill set successfully, just the overall inability to do that as much as anything. Yeah, him at the podium, him in the locker room, those are going to be hits and misses and trial and error, because I think he's a desperate coach and you can hear it in his voice. But I think overall the approach to the talent and the personnel never felt compatible.
No, and now we sit and we wait and we wonder and we guess and we do the Kremlinology of, you know, the camera zooms back in at the manse on the hill, and is Virginia coming down the stairs to commune with the council of elders, you know, the mystic incantations as they, it's so weird, and it always ends up weird. And here's George, who was the director of ticket operations, and now he's got to think, I gotta go hire a football guy again. Now what do I do? We'll consider some of it today and tomorrow, I think, but it's really bleak thinking about the big picture. It's when every road that I go down ends up in a very bleak and lonely place.
You see what the big story of the Jets is this morning, talking about big picture possibilities. Bill Cowher emerging as a top candidate there if they get the number one overall pick.
As coach?
As coach, yes. That's according to Boomer.
Now that's like a Tony La Russa kind of hire, right? I mean, that would be yes. except not as drunk and racist, but
not as old either. I don't
right?
think.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could, but there's something. I've been thinking a lot too about the power of, or lack thereof, that a top football executive has relative to other sports, and how it makes it a very difficult hire with a great deal of variance involved because. When you think about it, I mean, you right now, if you go to Amherst University, you can have a program. You can tailor your major at Amherst in baseball executive training. They literally can they teach it because of how complex it is, how much economics or how much math is involved. Baseball in basketball now, too, it is a global executive job. You're responsible for an entire organization's worth of players, hundreds of players. You're drafting 60 guys a year. You're developing guys over the long term. You got to know who's in basketball. You got to know who's in Israel and Germany and Turkey and Greece and Mongolia. And you can do so much. You have farm teams. You have development. You have all sorts of assets to move around. And football, what do you do? What do you do, right? You draft.
Oh, that's naive, Dan. Come on.
You sign, yeah. You
that's a big job.
You draft, yeah, you sign guys. You can sign guys, you can draft, you can make trades. But all your development is, a lot of it's out of your hand because of injuries. You pick a guy, well, I guess he's got to play, next man up.
And well, baseball sort of, injuries are the same thing. If somebody blows out his right arm, you draft 10 pitchers and eight of them have Tommy John surgery.
But that's your plan. But that's part of that's a forethought. That's because you've decided to line them up in a certain way and have them at certain levels promoted at certain times or in pitch lab ready to go with a two-seamer they didn't have last year. There's just so much more. And I'm not saying, like, football is it's a massive business.
I mean,
it's just a different
job.
Look
at the number of players you're talking about. I mean, come on. You got to be fair about it. There are more decisions to be made when you have more players on your roster.
But the size of the footprint of the sport, it's not a global sport. You're okay. They're all right here. You know, it's not a global sport. You don't have to send scouts all over the planet
to
unearth talent.
Maybe the solution, Dan, is to start doing more world type, find more of those rugby league players, you know, find some of these Australian
punters.
Yes, that's
I don't know if that's the market.
I like it, Dan. I like what you're up to.
See, I think Brad Biggs wrote some about it. I think it's really, really good. It's just, how do you know in a football organization who the next great executive is? Is it some former player who's famous? Is it somebody who's worked for an organization? Like, it's got to be really hard because everything is so, well, it's a collaboration and we build consensus. We don't have a scoreboard for the guy in someone else's organization who made all the smart picks, who was jumping up and down on the table for the guy they found in the fourth round who nobody else wanted. Like, we don't, how do you know? If you're George McCaskey, or you got to hire Ernie Accorsi, you got to find somebody in Ernie Accorsi, you know? How do you know?
How do you know in basketball? How do you know that Arturis Karnišovas was somebody that every NBA team wanted to hire? What was it about him? How do you know? Because people start to make impressions. They start to make decisions that set them apart from other people in the organization. It's the same in any organization, in any sport.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it's harder in football. And it may be because of how siloed the information is from individual teams. It may be that football executives talk less, but there is just there is something inscrutable about NFL business that is just seemingly more transparent in other sports. I don't know why that is. It may just be because it's only your team and your roster, and it's not multiple teams and multiple rosters under your control, and so much just the size of the footprint of the business being done. I don't know why it is, but it just seems like there's a higher degree of variance in hiring a football executive.
Okay, so what are you doing today?
I don't know. I think eventually we always say on these awful Bears Mondays that by noon we always feel better by the time noon rolls around. But we're going to take a bunch of phone calls. We're going to talk a little bit about the current situation that the Bears find themselves in, and what now? You know, what does this mean now in this intervening time? Should a move be made today? And if it's not, what are we doing and what's going on behind the scenes? We're going to talk it all through on every level. And Patrick Manley will be with us at 10, Hub Arkish at 11. We got a lot of sound. I want to bring Olin Kreutz is great with you guys as always. I want to revisit some of that stuff. And he talked a lot about organizational structure too. So we're going to do whatever we got to do on a Bears Monday.
Have a good show.
Okay. Thanks, boys.
Thank you very much.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.